We are back. It is Friday, April 26, 2024. This is Futures Power Hour. I'm your host, Chris Vecchio. He's Ilya Spivak, here to take you through the next 60 minutes as we talk about what's happening in these markets as we turn into a very important week ahead. Ilya, it's not just what's on the calendar. Markets have rallied back to some significant technical levels. We see, of course, that there's Amazon earnings on Tuesday. We're going to have the Fed meeting on Wednesday. There's non-farm payrolls on Friday. We're not quite out of the woods yet, even if the markets have traded strongly here on this Friday, coming off the back of those Microsoft and Google earnings.
That's right. And the price action is really pretty interesting here because it's not like we're getting a lot of follow through. So we had a big response, obviously, when we got those Google earnings and those Microsoft earnings. They clearly inspired some reshuffling in after hours action, and we have not really gone anywhere. We popped a little bit lower on the PCE number that came out a little bit hotter, came right back. It was complete standstill overnight in Asia and European markets, which is a bit odd. You'd think if the Google and Microsoft earnings were a boon for overall risk-taking, you'd see follow-through. You did not. So it's a really interesting place here. And of all things, yields are down. So it's a very strange sort of day here, almost as if the market is saying, you know, we're not going to make a bet here. Let's get into next week.
The bond movement is certainly interesting. You make a point. Stocks popped up. I'm looking at NASDAQ on another screen right now. 17,825, we'll call it, after hours yesterday. We're only at 17,883. That's encouraging enough for me because I've been saying all week long, the name of the game is survival. You get those key technical targets to the downside in ES and NQ with the head and shoulders pattern and the double top, respectively. And what happens when we bounce? Is this a low or is it the low? And I think we're having those critical technical tests right around the corner. We're starting to get into that zone for ES right now. We've been there for the Russell. We're going to delve into that in a little bit right now because this could ultimately determine where the next, say, 200 points are. And that's not what I wanted to do here. So we're going to get that back up. Where the next 200 points are right now in the S&P 500. Ilya, as I pull this back up on the screen here, you mentioned you're saying it's interesting price action. This is a market reaction that's a little bit different than what we've seen in recent days. And what I mean by that is we're actually holding on to our gains over the course of the session. This has been a market, at least over the first 3 weeks of April up until this week, where when we had rallies, they were quickly sold off. And then you close the market much weaker. Is the fact that that sentiment is beginning to roll over here, that we're seeing the market just kind of scratch and claw higher, is that a meaningful change to you in the behavior of the price action relative to what was clearly a down market in early April, or rather the middle of the month?
I would say not yet. And I think those key technical barriers are going to be critical because we're basically on the deciding line here. That we're not able to find follow through is a little bit interesting because we're not able to find it in either direction. We're not really going anywhere. We're basically sitting at these technical levels, having essentially retraced off the lows back to the point of the break on both the topping pattern in the S&P, the topping pattern in NASDAQ. We've already failed, perhaps, at a similar point in Russell. We've already come off a similar level and started to decline. So it's early yet, it's a little mini decline. It's not, I would say, convincing at this point. It was a decline off that level yesterday, and today we've erased that decline. So we're basically back even, but also we haven't gone anywhere. So it's a strange thing. It's as though the market is kind of clenching its fists, waiting to figure out which way it wants to jump, but unsure of where that is.
We're going to look at the charts momentarily. I want to talk through this macro calendar next week because as busy as this one was with perhaps a tilt towards the earnings side of things, next week, it's decidedly a little bit more macro. We had GDP this week. We had PCE today. We survived both. the month over month reading on PC was something like 0.26% month over month. So it gets rounded up. That's far below what was the scary whisper number that was going around yesterday and today, which was, ooh, we're going to see a 0.4% month over month reading. Yeah. That certainly didn't materialize. And so bonds are up today, stocks are up today, going into this very critical week where you're going to have the Treasury refunding announcements on Monday. You're going to have ISM manufacturing. You're going to get the Fed meeting on Wednesday. You're going to have your jobs report on Friday, Thursday. Canada trade balance really doesn't deserve a high rating, but it has one nonetheless, I guess, for 6C. What do you care more about here? With rate cut odds so low for June, with rate cut odds so low for July right now, what the Fed says in May doesn't necessarily move the needle because the market's already gotten to a relatively hawkish stance. In fact, you could argue right now that as the market is priced, it's priced more hawkishly than what the Fed's most recent interest rate projection suggested. So do you care more about
the key?
Do you care more about the Fed next week or about the non-farm payrolls report?
I think it has to be both because the Fed comes ahead of the non-farm payrolls number. And I think what the Fed is going to do is ultimately going to be more important in that it will set the lens through which we will then interpret what the jobs number is going to show us. So to see the jobs numbers without the Fed would be a very different thing than to see them after the Fed. So what the Fed does here is going to be really important because they whistled past the graveyard last time. And that, of course, is a huge part of how we ended up where we are now. They came in March and said, right, we know the data has been hotter. Right, we know inflation has been stickier. Sure. But, you know, that's in the past. We've revised our forecasts based on these things that have already happened. And by the way, we want to stress they're revised based on things that have already happened, not things that we're extrapolating. Powell made that very, very abundantly clear. And we still think that we need three cuts. And the market, you think what? And the market topped within 24 hours because the market essentially said, yeah, no, we're going to go ahead and challenge you on this. You're not correct. You're going to have to come our way on this. And so the markets for about a day shifted to a little bit more of a dovish setting and then said, nah, the Fed's wrong and we're right. This is not what's going to happen. But, and since then, we're at a pretty steady shift to a more hawkish setting. I mean, we're at 29 basis points now.
It's nothing.
It's what, 4 basis points more than one cut?
16% chance of
not even 5. They couldn't even get the 5. So it's a very interesting moment here because we've already heard the Fed start to kind of begrudgingly go the market's way in the week before this one. This is obviously a blackout week ahead of a policy announcement, so they haven't said anything. But last week when they were still talking and Powell was still talking, they started to kind of come this way. I think there's a lot to be had here if they acknowledge what the markets are doing and start to, in an official statement, go that way, because last time they clearly did not. And so here it'll be impactful, though the markets are already there. They were there last time too. The key thing I think here is going to be the Fed actually acknowledges it and resets their perspective and updates the statement and says, okay, you're right. 3 points make a line. We've now had 3 inflation reports that are too hot.
Not just CPI, but also PCE have been.
Also PCE, also the GDP, numbers that came out yesterday were notable for very elevated price components. They're going to have to offer some lip service here, but that's what we would have thought last time, and they didn't. So there is surprise risk here.
So for like a interpretation of that, what you're saying is a dovish Fed is bad for markets. A Fed that acknowledges the reality, the sober Fed, its hands on the steering wheel Fed that the market liked last year. That's the messaging that this market needs to hear. Otherwise, it goes, well, you really think that you're still going to be able to cut 3 times? we're going to challenge you on this again, and we'll push up rates even more because you're not taking the inflation problem seriously.
That can certainly be one way this goes. Another way this goes is the Fed acknowledges that, in fact, what has happened has happened, and the market goes, right, told you so, risk off. Rates are going to be higher. This is our confirmation. I think for the markets to really get the sense here that the Fed is supportive of risk appetite, the Fed would need to again attempt to kind of twist itself in knots to say, yes, we acknowledge what's going on. Yes, we think we're going to maybe need to cut less, but we still think the next move is a cut, and we still think it's happening this year. And essentially, try to split the baby. Then that might signal to the markets, we've baked in enough. Because if they say, look, we're going to cut this year, and the markets are set for one cut at this point, essentially, is there any more to price in? Well, maybe not. But if the Fed comes out more unambiguously hawkish, then you have some room to maybe speculate on no cuts, maybe even a hike. And that opens up a different avenue for speculation. So the Fed might need to not open that avenue while acknowledging reality. And that's kind of the narrow path that I think stocks would appreciate most.
I guess my question is, when you say risk off, is it classic risk off, stocks down, bonds up, or is it 2022 variety of risk off where everything gets killed?
I would say it's the 22 variety because, well, depending on which way you go. If you come out and you say, if you're the Fed and the messaging is, yes, we see it, inflation's hotter, we are going to have to take this point by point. And if that means that we're not going to cut, then that's what it means. And if it means that we might have to hike, then that's what it means. We're data dependent. That's 2022 risk aversion. That's the markets going, ah, well, this is not a dovish Fed. This is a Fed that was wanting to get the 3 points to make their line in March. They've made it. Okay. They're responsive to the news as it arrives. If, on the other hand, you get a Fed that says, yeah, we're still going to cut at some point this year. We know things have been hotter. We're attentive to them. That probably reduces how many rate cuts we thought we could do, but we still think we're probably going to cut. That's probably risk off classic.
Let's turn our attention to these charts here, sir. Stocks holding on to their earning gains. They're pushing higher here as the day goes on. It hasn't been a significant move higher ever since the gap opened. And really, we gapped open effectively to where we were after hours last night. Mm-hmm. I mean by that is, like, we've held there all day. 51.42 right now. The open was 51.32. So it's just been a 10-point rally.
Tumbleweeds are rolling out here.
Excuse me?
Tumbleweeds are rolling out here. There's just nothing going on.
We're watching paint dry today and this afternoon because there's still considerable risk ahead. I don't think the geopolitical consideration of the weekend coming around the corner is worth discussing at all. But this is the important test now that we're facing here. The S&P 500 hit that head and shoulders pattern near 5,000.25, that target, and it bounced. Did overshoot on Thursday night because of the geopolitical tensions. Yep. Technical analysis, we've never held out. It's perfect. It's always more art than science. But we do get the close at 5,003.75. So right at that area.
Like 2 points off.
Right. And now we started to bounce back. And so the one thing that I've been looking for all week is, like, hey, this market kind of has felt bull trappy, but bears aren't really capitalizing. Let's see what happens when we get back to that 2134 EMA envelope or the cloud, however you describe it, because that was support the entirety of the way up November onwards. And it really held its support even through the middle part of April. It was only here on April 12th that it finally broke. And so between the neckline of that head and shoulders pattern at 5167 or so, and then that 2134 EMA envelope, you have this area between, we'll call it 5140 up to 5170, that is really important technical resistance. And so if you're long right now and you've caught this move off the low, The question is whether or not you want to manage your position and trim risk. Do you want to say, take some profit and adjust? Because if we don't succeed through here, the consideration is that 49.63 and a half, the low from last Thursday evening, going into Friday morning, very much in play and can't be ruled out whatsoever.
No, I agree with all of that. I mean, I think this is put up or shut up time for everybody.
For both Bulls and Bears.
Exactly. Everybody. We've arrived at the point where somebody has to yank the rope and win. And at this point, it's unclear what that is. I would say what's particularly interesting is we clearly had enough of a catalyst to get the Bulls excited to arrive here. But they're not following through. That's not encouraging if you're bullish. On the other hand, the Bears clearly have a weakened bull hand to trade against because they're not following through and they're not making hay of it. So everybody is looking at this and essentially going, I don't know. And maybe it's because it's Friday. Maybe it's because nobody wants to lean in one way or another. I would not be surprised if there is some kind of a late day attempt, either way, to try to make a run. I would think the Bears have a little bit more wind at their back to try to do that because obviously the trend still points down. It is still a series of lower lows and lower highs from the peak back at the beginning of the month. So maybe that there's a little bit more momentum behind a liquidation push versus an attempt to overturn what has been a trend since the beginning of the month and even late March. A trend dies hard, almost by definition. So maybe that's what we're looking at here, is an attempt toward the end of the day today to kind of distribute out and get back to, let's say, 5,100, 50, something like that. But at this point, nothing. It's a flat line.
This is a place, if you go back to the middle of February through early March, clearly a magnet for the market for whatever reason. We'll call it right around 5,140, 5,170. But I point this out because this is where we find ourselves right now. This was crucial for developing a stair step higher at the end of February, and that's where we find this EMA envelope. So if you, the question is, do you want to get long here? Volatility's come in a little bit. We have a little bit of a rally. The Bears, they fumbled the ball. I don't think the risk to reward's great here to get long right now, the weekend, heading into next week, because in terms of confidence, just a little bit higher. I mean, if we're looking at April 30th here, where the candlestick will line up, if we're at 51, we'll go through May 1st. If the close is at like 51.75 on May 1st, we get through the Fed meeting up there. You've then broken the downtrend that's carried us throughout the month of April. You've then cleared out this zone. You've made your headway through your 21.34 EMA envelope. And then you could say, hold on a second here. This was the correction. And then you can overlay your seasonal stats and say, well, what does the market look like? And now I have a technical tailwind to my back where we have a little bit of upside here going into a new month. What's the historic performance of the market in the month of May after we just saw a run like we did? And we know it's positive. And so you have a little bit more confidence. Then I told you about the mindset shift that bulls have. It's like, hold on, you just threw World War III and higher energy prices and higher inflation and the breakout in gold and silver and earnings and all this. And like, all I got was this lousy t-shirt. Like, okay, we're done. Time to try to trade this back to the yearly highs.
I agree with that.
But on the other hand, right? Like if you fail here, then you can't rule out a return back to the lows in anything, in ES or NQ, which is facing a very similar technical setup right now as the S&P 500, racing back into that 21.34 cloud.
This is clean.
And it's getting back to
This is so clean technically that it makes you want to have a loud debate with some sort of opponent of technical analysis that you hypothetically conjure in your mind, where you just...
Or that you work with.
Where you look at the screen and you just go full Don Quixote. See, look at it.
Right. So we hit our, measured move right around, technically speaking, 17,306. If we're going to go to the exact point, we overshoot it, of course, with those tensions last week. We're getting a rebound back to former support, what may be resistance. Again, both that 2134 EMA cloud.
The initial break, like right there.
Right there. And God. This is the market closed here on April 15th after we had the initial break at 17,876. We're at 17,889. We're right at the 1 month moving average at 17,891 and a quarter. So again, do you want to get long here after what's been a very strong week? In fact, folks, this has been such a strong week, to put it in context. This is the best week of the year for the S&P 500 on the NASDAQ. Hard to believe considering what's gone on in April, that April, the worst month of the year so far, also contains the best week of the year so far. Mm-hmm. But there is this technical resistance ahead. There is, of course, all this event risk ahead right now. So if you've been long, do you want to adjust your position? Do you want to give yourself a little bit more duration? Do you want to change the width of your strikes so that you can reduce your exposure so you can maintain your bullish exposure, right? But you don't necessarily are at risk as much next week if the market comes back in, effectively taking some profit off the table. That's the bullish consideration that you have right now. If you're a bear, quite frankly, if you hadn't gotten out and you were looking to leg back in after the initial decline, the risk reward is much more favorable here, because if you get above 18K, you know what? It's 108 points in the NASDAQ right now. It's very clear for you to say, this is a small risk, because if I can get short here or swing back to the lows, 700 points plus, 800 points almost right now, I can risk one to make eight. That's a pretty good idea as we trade up into resistance. So it, depending upon your time frame and your point of view, you may take a look at this market very differently. Ilya, I know you and I have been looking at this differently, because you were short starting in late March while I was still long. I got knocked out of the market in mid-April. I get back in, start nibbling while you and I are texting, watching Iranian TV last week. And so while it's been beneficial for me, you're on the other side where you are also still right. We just have different time frames here because you've been short for longer. But you've been talking about jumping back in on the short side here. So is this enough of a push into resistance to get you to reinitiate those short positions across the board on equities? I know you jumped back in on ES.
I have them back on.
You have them back on.
I have them back on. I have them back on. I have NQ back on. I have ES back on. I'm a little bit upside down on them, obviously, because the earnings yesterday gave a little bit of a nudge. Not in any kind of a way that's concerning.
Hold on a second. If you,
at this point,
let's say you didn't put them back on yet, as someone who is looking to put them back on, even with today's price action, would you consider doing that?
With today's price action, I might be a little bit more tempted. I might also wait. I think what got me back into NQ, for example, was that doji that you see right there, that very clean shooting. I wouldn't even call it a shooting star. I'd call that something like a morning star cluster trying to happen. And of course, there's a gap there, and we don't get the third candle, but that you get that star candle right there, the red one. It ultimately doesn't confirm into a morning star. But that star candle, the red one there, that gaps up, goes nowhere, and closes down, that was enough for me to put it back on. Similarly to how I did it when I was shorting near the top here, I'm a little bit more trigger happy when it comes to trying to sell stocks. Because stocks, as you very, I think, astutely described, stair step up and elevator down. And if you miss it, you miss it. So I've been a little bit more aggressive with putting things on before I have all of the technical confirmation that I might ask of, let's say, a currency where you have things that move around 24 hours a day with very deep liquidity, and you usually get allowed into a market because it's oftentimes a two-way market. Volatility is more symmetrical. There's less inherent bias one way or another. So I would normally look for more confirmation were it, let's say, a commodity or a currency. trying to sell a runaway stocks rally, I've been a little bit more aggressive. And that's why I've done it in very small size. And that's why I've used vertical spreads rather than outright futures positions to keep risk very much contained, to keep risk reward manageable, because I am being a little bit more aggressive than I normally would. If I was looking to reestablish here, I mean, the risk reward is very good. We're very close to resistance. I would want some kind of a trigger similar to what we just saw on the daily chart with that candle. Some of that may be happening as we speak, as a matter of fact, because if we look at what's happening right at this very moment with bonds, and we'll go look at bonds in just a second, they're running away from today's gains. And that's interesting, because that means yields are rebounding. And that could very well be a catalyst for some distribution into the end. The way the Russell looks, I think, is an interesting thing here for the bears and encouraging for them as a kind of thing that doesn't have a lot of tech skew and so hasn't been as pushed around by their earnings. And so you get a little bit more of a, this is where equities sans tech risk think they want to go. So it's an interesting kind of thing. I would strongly consider putting this back on if I did not have it on already, but I would probably want like a 4-hour close confirmation of reverse or something like this, which at the moment we don't have.
Yeah, in consideration of the fact that we see a pivot point here back on January 17th, right near 17,000, where we have lows carved out last week, we are effectively sitting in the middle of a range that you could argue that's been in place since the middle of January. If traders are apprehensive about heading into a macro week with considerable event risk, binary risk, earnings, and you look at the profile of this market, I think a 41.1 is still nothing to sneeze at. Setting the wings of your iron condor outside of the bounds of that range, say looking to buy the 16,750, put selling the 17,001 and then going up to the calls, selling the 18,750 and buying back the 19,000, it gives you a 52% probability of profit, which is a little bit less than I like to operate with when I look at iron condors. I shoot for more for that like 63 to 67% range, but it is a max profit of about 2,010 to a max loss of 2,990. And so, you know, 2 to 3 isn't awful on the risk to reward there either. Instead of placing a directional bet, we could effectively say that we don't know. And as long as we stay within this range, you know, we have a chance. Are we going to see a 700 or 800 point move in a single session in the NASDAQ? That's probably on the lower side of things. So if we do start to see acceleration to the top side, or you start to see a move back lower, perhaps it becomes a situation where you can adjust it and maybe take off one of the wings or simply shift it down so that you can acknowledge the fact that we're going to go back to support or we're going to go back to the yearly highs. But you should have enough time on either end if you go to, say, 55 days out to make that kind of adjustment here. So instead of placing any sort of directional bet, let's look to the volatility profile. It is elevated. We're sitting in the middle of a multi-month range. This may be the best way to express, you know, that particular point of view right now. In the short term, you don't really care what happens next week if the market goes up or down, if it fails or if it succeeds here. Quite frankly, we're just going to stay chopping around because of this, you know, continued tug and pull of influences, higher rates, Fed cutting cycles, geopolitical risk, earnings, growth, inflation, right? Like we don't, it's not necessarily going to create a robust market in the short term. That would be one way to express this point of view.
Yeah.
Not there for me. I'd have to maybe widen this out a little bit more. We could probably
the spinning top candlestick is what that is. There we go.
This is 62%, by the way. 16,500, 16,750, the 19K and the 19,250 wings there for the NASDAQ. Ilya, one of the reasons why I point out the importance of this retest here right around this like monthly, a little bit more than 1 month moving average envelope is because of what's been happening in the Russell the past few days. Forget the fact that 2134 EMA cloud has been support all year long up until about 2 weeks ago. in ESNNQ ever since the lows at the end of last year. Talk about trend support flipping over and becoming resistance. That's actually been the case here in the Russell for the past several sessions. That 2134
very clean in the Russell.
EMA cloud, which was support for most of the year, even if the rally was certainly more tepid and it didn't really hold up as well as it did in ESRNQ. You could see here that ever since April 23rd, we've rallied up into it and we haven't made any progress whatsoever. It's kind of like ESNNQ have been playing a little bit more catch up back to their trend resistance areas, as it were.
The Russell has a horizontal line at the March low. I mean, this could not be cleaner.
That's the next thing that's in here right now, where you have your cloud, similar to what you saw in ES and Q, where you have former support turn resistance. That line at the March low cuts through right into that region here. Yep. And so all of a sudden, the Russell, we're kind of at decision time. Can we get through this 2034 to 2036 area? Excuse me, 2024 to 2036 area. If we do, then this bullish falling wedge looks like it actually has some legs to it. And then 2114 appears like a much more likely outcome than, say, a return to the low. But failure here, the lows near 1915.8 can't be ruled out, actually becomes a much more likely scenario. That's why, again, 52.9, in fact, you think about where we are compared to the high, near 21.67, and where we are to the low. We're not quite 100 points wide on each. It's a little closer to the lows than to the highs. But this is also another place where, forget directional bets. Let's look to vol, 52.9 IVR. Capitalize on that. Iron Condor right around the highs and recent lows, maybe a little bit lower than the recent lows, but you could still take advantage of that situation. You don't need to say next week is going to be good or bad for stocks. Who cares? Volatility gets through these events. What did we see over the course of this week, Ilya? Why did vol come in? You pointed this out, because we just got past the events themselves and they weren't world ending. So even if this market doesn't make a significant lurch to the upside, as long as vol contracts, that would be something that's beneficial. Just for the sake of this conversation, if you go out to say 42 days or even 55 here, we're going to go to 42. I do still have a short put spread on that we need to address soon. We're not quite there yet, but looking at the 1875 long call, excuse me, long put, short 1900 put, short 2150 call, short, oh my God, we're starting over. Long 1875 put, short 1900 put, short 2150 call, long 2175 call. Second time's a charm. 63% probability of profit, max profit 360 against a max loss of 890. It's close enough to the 45 days. Again, indifferent to next week. It's above recent highs. It's below recent lows for the year. You have some nice vol here. In fact, considering where we are, I think this is something, this is a pretty nice overlay to have on top of my short Russell put spread, which I'm going to be getting out of. I have to adjust that later today anyway. This might be something I put on myself. So if I do, you'll find it in the follow tab elsewhere. But otherwise, Ilya, I really have nothing to do here in ES, because I'm long and it's at resistance. So why would I add more to it? It's whether or not I just want to reduce my exposure by adjusting my position limit. So that's something I'll be thinking about today. I know you've been itching to talk about bonds here. However, those yields did dip lower today. We got through the PCE report, not nearly as scary as everyone thought it might be. But you pointed out that as the session has moved forward here, bonds have slowly been leaking to the downside. It's not like there was a big auction. But no, this hasn't been a good, you know, rest of the day. It's been a slow death by paper cuts kind of session where we're just leaking and leaking and leaking and leaking.
And we've run away, and we've run away from a key break, it seems.
Go say more.
So if we look at ZB, we look at ZN here, what we see is the wicks test into former support become resistance, and they run away. Now, does that mean anything? Who knows? This is shorter time frame stuff. But if we end up, let's say, at the lows of this range by the end of the day, if we get back to what were the spike lows after PCE right there, if that's how this goes, might be a very different story to tell here. So if you look at, let's say, we can be on ZB here, the sort of underside of the range that got broken yesterday is something like 113.28, 113.27, the open from April the 17th, right there. And we're not able to meaningfully break it. So on the 1 hour, you can see we popped through it and we're coming back in. If you look at it on, let's say, the daily or the 4 hour or the 8 hour, you're running away from the side of that break to the downside now. So another sort of interesting point here. On the hourly, you can see there is a bit of a friction at intraday resistance now support, exactly as you just had it, and we're going to find out what we end up doing. But when you look at it on the daily and you see all of that pop and decline now that we're looking at here as a single wick that tests back into the range and then runs away, maybe that's something. Unclear.
It's a nice little inside day so far, but as you point out, as we drew on the screen here on the hourly chart, the uptrend from yesterday's lows is being tested right now.
Yeah.
I really want to be long bonds at some point in time, because I think if the Fed acknowledges next week, like we're taking this seriously, there's a good opportunity there. I'm very much a believer in the perception that the Fed has a sober mindset. Mm-hmm. Matters most to the markets. In 2022, yeah, when it looked like the Fed was whistling past the graveyard, the market was, no, they're not serious about this inflation. 2021, it was fine because stocks are still rallying. Punishment comes in 2022. And then last year, it's kind of like, well, everything's fine, right?
Yeah.
Everything's fine. The Fed's okay. Everything's fine. The Fed's got this. No problem.
Yeah. In 2022, they definitely showed like, look, we're not going to take this lying down.
No. And you see the bond market is able, granted it goes hand in hand with cut expectations rising, but you see the bond market able to go through periods when it's able to rally. And maybe if we find ourselves that the Fed is taking it seriously and we're at a floor, you could start to look for something on the long bond side, but it's just an inside day today. You're losing ground over the course of the session. And there's so much more volatility in stocks. So now bonds are just such an unsexy thing to trade intraday as is. Is this really a good place to declare the downtrend over to catch the falling knife?
I
don't think so, Mr. Spivak. I see a 33.6 IVR and ZN. ZT doesn't really have great options, and it's only a 4.7. So maybe that
this one leaked away even more dramatically.
I mean, ZT, unless the Fed, I mean, I guess you could make the case, unless the Fed actually hikes, how much lower can ZT really go? So maybe just buying the futures contract soon would be worthwhile when you get to maybe around 100, you know, 101, because the options are garbage here, or shy. But outside of that, what's the play? It still feels like you're catching a falling knife. You got to squeeze out those remaining cut odds for June and July as well, as things stand. And that's just going to be an overhead weight. So I don't see much of anything interesting here in bonds yet, Ilya. Agreed. Although continue to watch whether or not we see that intraday weakness.
I want to be long, but I don't want to be long yet.
Exactly. Right. Metals, on the other hand, they are mixed. They're not necessarily bothered per se by what's happening in the bond market, although they're losing their gains intraday.
This is a very interesting situation in the metals, because you'll notice they had the one day on Monday, and since then, crickets.
Death. Nothing. Quiet. Dead as a doornail. But that's not necessarily a bad thing if you're a bull, because you experienced such a big shock. And if you look at how the market responded in December, when you have that big move lower, you have this sidestep for a few days, but the cracking begins by day four. This is day four of this, and you haven't seen continuation to the downside. We're holding up at the 1 month moving average, both here in GC and in SI, which is exactly what I would have hoped to see. Granted, silver's a little bit weaker on the day than gold is right now, but we're just hugging what has been the trend support, as it were, since we started to break out at the end of February, beginning of March. So right now, much ado about nothing. these are dollar denominated assets at the end of the day. However, Ilya, and how's our dollar doing today? Pretty well.
I mean, it's an interesting thing because it depends where you look.
Well, if you're the Japanese yen, it's a very bad day.
If you're the Japanese yen, the dollar is doing swimmingly.
Who knows what's going on with the yen? And I think that's perhaps the more salient thing. Ilya, I still have my exposure to silver. I got in long through SLV the other day. For me, the technicals are very, very clear, particularly when you take a step back long term. I like this from the long call spread side because vol has come back in and there is a positive correlation between silver prices and silver volatility, excuse me. Mine went blank there for a quick moment. And then when you look at the monthly time frame going back 20 years, you think about where we were in 2011 off the highs and 2020, 21 off those highs. And it looks like we've just started to break out. So not going to be cute here and overthink this. Trend line broken, market wants to go up. I will look for long entries. And after having missed the return to the last retest of the 1 month moving average, now we're back here again. So I'm in long. I'm going to be patient. This is one of those longer term perspectives, Ilya, because this is a monthly chart.
Yeah,
I will just continue to find opportunities to be long and pick and choose my spots, plain and simple. And if we get a significant breach below this 2134 EMA cloud on the daily time frame, then I know it's time to get out and just then be patient and wait for a better reentry point. And maybe that means it's somewhere closer to, say, 26 or even deeper. Maybe it's low as 24 and a half. But I will absolutely take a swing again, given the longer term technicals.
I mean, they certainly look very interesting here. I don't think that I'm prepared to start looking for buying opportunities, considering we're basically at the top of that that monthly range that you just showed us. We've run away from it a little. I certainly think that there is an opportunity here eventually. I am biased long in metals, not because I think that they are a reflection of the Fed or yields here. In fact, they've very loudly decoupled from that story, very loudly. And I think the story is Chinese reserve accumulation, and I don't see that story going away in a hurry. So my kind of mental map has been, let's see what the Fed does. Because we clearly saw at the beginning of this week, episodically, gold can have responsiveness to its more usual catalysts. And then you get very clear vision of those catalysts being not what's actually in charge. So you get one day on Monday. Oh, Israel and Iran have closed the escalation loop. One big downtick and then nothing, no follow through. You immediately see where the support from not geopolitics, not Fed, not rates, not any of those narratives suddenly shows up and goes, nope, we're not going there. You can have your one-off. We're not going anywhere though. Silver is the same thing. Silver has been following the gold playbook essentially to a T since we started to decouple on metals from their kind of normal dollar-based, yields-based, Fed-sensitive kind of dynamics, or geopolitical dynamics for that matter.
Right.
That's another sort of usual gold thing.
Well, I mean, it says a lot about gold that while oil erased all of its volatility gains and price gains since April 3rd, when Israel killed that Iranian General Zahedi in Damascus, gold didn't.
Allegedly.
Gold did not give up those gains, right?
No.
So that says a lot about how there's a higher floor here. It's not about geopolitics. And even in the face of higher yields, even as real yields have, this is the whole thing, right? My whole perspective on gold has been, it makes sense fundamentally. If you think that the Fed is making a policy mistake and that they're going to allow inflation to continue to go up, but they're not going to have the gall to actually raise rates. So there's a ceiling right now in rates and inflation's running up towards it. That means real yields in the future will head down.
Yep.
But real yields have been going up in actuality for the past several weeks.
And inflation expectations.
And right, which says a lot about gold. This should not be a friendly environment for it.
No.
Right. On a day-to-day basis. So if it's about what comes next, then gold probably, I mean, the fact that gold is up here in what should be a very challenging environment probably says that the floor is higher. And the floor continues to get raised. So I'm very, very reticent about looking. Again, the longer term daily chart here, you talk about Chinese reserve accumulation. I'll talk about what I see as a very long term monthly breakout going back over 2 years. It's only gotten started. And quite frankly, the range still calls for an estimated move to 2575, which we know has not been achieved yet in the short term. So I have no choice.
And by the way, the 5 year, 10 year, you're right. You're absolutely right. The 5 year break even, the 10 year break even, they're coming back in because all of this repricing of Fed policy odds to a more hawkish setting, it's had an effect. So it's not like the market is not listening. From about April the 15th.
Oh, until now. Yeah. It's been the past 2 weeks.
The bond market has started to pull it back in. They've said, whoa, whoa, okay. We get it. Inflation's hotter. They're only going to do one cut. Okay. And it makes sense. Yields have been rising. Bonds have been falling. Break-even rates are shifting. This would be the time for gold to go, okay, I understand what's going on here. Let me just moonwalk off these highs. Nope.
It says a lot to me. I think it says a lot to you. I don't have any affinity for gold as a safe haven during times of inflation because the data there are quite frankly garbage about it.
One of my favorite places to get indignant. And yet.
Crude oil here continues to dance around, not ready to give up its gains yet. Yesterday on Futures Power Hour, we were warning the fact that you had IVR that was negative in crude, and perhaps that was just a temporary thing. And the market was not giving up the fact that this descending trend line from the June 22, September 23 highs cutting across the screen. The fact that that 2134 EMA cloud, which has been support since the breakout on February 8th, was continuing to hold up here. You can't really justify selling calls in that environment.
No.
Because you have negative IVR and the market's responding at support. Do you want to buy an out-of-the-money put? So what do you do? It's nothing really going on in energy, but now you're trading higher again. We gap up. We're continuing to nudge higher. And then we benchmark the geopolitical risk, and it goes back to the pre-scheduled program, which, to remind people, in March, prior to the Iranian-Israeli tensions going up, oil was already rallying. So who's to say that it wouldn't be here anyway without the geopolitics risk? Sure enough, what do we do? Well, last week, we see that we get a big pullback in oil while they bid bounce on Friday. We were below where we were on April 3rd. So that geopolitical risk came off the board. This is difficult to fade right now. You go to the weekly, and I don't see the justification here for thinking that this is something that's ready to give up. We had this potential evening star cluster coming together. We were talking about it last week, how this is the big week. Got to find follow through. You can't let this thing come back from the dead. And yet here we are, alive. Holy. It's not fully in the clear. We haven't gotten back above the September highs. But if you've been a bear, you've been fading the move to the upside, this is not encouraging at all. If you really got to hold on to it, extend duration, give yourself more time. So if the market moves against you, it doesn't hurt as much. But there's nothing encouraging technically here for the bears right now. There is no follow through to the downside. And momentum, despite some divergence, is not pushing price lower.
I would say on the daily is where you get the most kind of encouraging thing if you're bearish, because you've come into the underside of your former congestion range there and you're testing it again. We did have that wild spike when Israel retaliated, and then it looked pretty much as much of a theater exercise as the Iranian move that preceded it. So you look at this and you go, everybody's had their chance to get on the stage. Everybody's done their song and dance for their the domestic audience. It's silly that we had to do this, but okay, fine. So you look at this and you say, okay, well, you're not overtaking former support as resistance. And today's candle, and I'm going to remember this word now, is a spinning top candle. The coffee is kicking in. It's only almost 11 a.m. here in San Francisco. So, and I like to watch European markets. So thankfully I'm more awake now as the coffee has worked its way in, but you're seeing it stall here. And that's a bit of a lifeline if you're bearish, but if you don't have exposure on, this is not the place where I would go and have exposure to enter either long or short, because from the long side, you're right at resistance and it's looking a little fuzzy as to whether you have momentum through. So the risk reward is off. And on the downside, there's no confirmation that it won't do that. So tough to say.
Ilya, a quick look at natural gas here. IBR of 23 continues to head lower. It's an ugly market. I've been keeping this on my watch list, looking for signs of us holding that support again. A move to fresh lows, maybe here. We just really can't find any acceleration when we try to base. We're awash in natural gas. Positioning is not super extended right now to the downside. It's staying on the watch list for me heading into next week, and maybe it doesn't come off of it. What the yen? I think that's appropriate. I'm allowed to say that, right? What's happening right now?
Here's a
1.36% lower right now, Ilya, in today's session. We're quickly racing towards 160 in the spot market to set the table for people.
Yeah.
157.73 right now. This thing keeps going up and up and up over the course of today. We had a BOJ meeting last night.
Yeah.
What's going on here? I've been very reticent to fade this, as you know, and I'm glad that I haven't been tempted.
It's been my worst trade all year. I've not gotten back in.
And this is why, you know, I personally stepped away, because I'm just going to go purely technical on this, right? Yeah. To get long, I need to see basing and a turn higher through momentum, which hasn't happened. Or I need oil prices coming back and then yields going down. That way the table's set for a BOJ intervention. None of those conditions are met, so I'm hands off still.
Yep.
But it's a 115.2 IVR now. So I understand the temptation for people to get in here and just try to sell some puts. Unfortunately, the high in 1990 above 160, about 160.40, corresponds with 6J sitting closer to 0062. So selling a put here right now is extremely dangerous. But why today, of all the days? Of all the days that end in Y, Ilya, we have 3 minutes left. Why is the yen dunking today?
Because the BOJ didn't say anything. They came out last night, and I've been scouring this statement up and down. The summary in the statement, the details in the statement. I cannot for the life of me find anything other than kind of equivocating, well, we're just going to have to keep watching. This is there's a high degree of uncertainty. In fact, I'll read you the exact quote here from the BOJ that I think really captures it, where they say that there's high uncertainties around Japan's economic outlook and prices. And then they say, under these circumstances, it is necessary to pay attention to developments in financial and foreign exchange markets. Yeah, you think? And that's it. and that's it. So they really don't even rhetorically push back. So in response, the market goes, okay, listen, we know we've been waving our hands in front of your face. What if we like start poking your nose, actually? Will you respond then? Can we get you, like, how much can we chin check you further? So at this point, I think it's that thing that you and I have been talking about. The BOJ needs to see the markets exhaust. They're trying to wait them out. This is the merry weather's strategy, it seems like. This is Floyd being defensive until the other side tires out.
Well, Ilya, as we're wrapping up here, I just want to give people a sense of this. The high from 1990 is 160.40 in the dollar yen spot rate. That is equivalent to a 0.06234 6J rate. If you wanted to fade this thing and think there's no way that the BOJ and Ministry of Finance allow them to get through those levels, there's your put spread. 76% probability of profit. Max profit of 150 against a max loss of 475. This is effectively the trade to say, yeah, there's going to be some more weakness here in the short term, but we're not going to break that high. Do I see a reason to do this right now? Absolutely not, which is why I'm not doing it myself. But if you want to have an intervention trade on around that 1990 equivalent level, this is where you would be looking in the market. Ilya,
Madman's Delight is what you're after.
It's not even a Madman's Delight, because Madman's Delight would give you a 10-1 on the max profit.
It's not even that delightful.
Delightful at all. Yeah, just plain mad. Maybe you could go through the long, again, tasty methodology where you sell the puts, but like a long call spread here, you know, 62, 62 and a half. Do you want to cough all that up? 162 and a half versus a loss of 462 and a half. Again, not great. And you're basically saying that the BOJ Ministry of Finance will be able to intervene because oil will be breaking lower and yields will be breaking lower. And they don't have that right now, so they can't do much of anything. And so I'm just going to stay away. I don't think it's we're not going to gamble on what policymakers across the Pacific are doing,
especially at the BOJ.
No, that's not. I mean, when the table's set for it, then it's reasonable to do it. The table's not set right now. And so, all right, as we wind down the show, calendar for Monday, not much of anything. Watch for the Treasury refunding announcement later in the afternoon, though. Entirety of the bond market, whether or not we can bottom here, maybe that is at stake. Ilya, as we typically do at the end of every one of these shows, we do a brief bit of education. Today, we are talking about types of margin. Go to tastylive.com, top banner, learn beginner futures, where you can find this great course put together by fine folks on the Tasty Live research team. As I said, we're talking about types of margin today. Initial margin is the amount of capital required in your account to deploy a given trade. Futures exchanges use proprietary methods for calculating initial margin, which takes into account the product being traded, as well as the current trading environment, as well as the historical volatility, mind you. Maintenance margin is the amount of capital a trader needs to maintain in his or her account in order to hold on to the position. And if you fall below that level, your position can be closed if you don't respond to the margin call, which is never fun. So don't get margin called. Maintain your capital, practice prudent risk management, and learn more at tastylive.com, top banner, learn beginner futures, or simply click the link here on the bottom of the slide. It will take you there directly. Ilya, we are done and dusted and we are running over, so this is going to be quick. I hope you have a good weekend, my friend. I hope the good viewers of Futures Power Hour have a good weekend as well. We'll be back on Monday, same time, same place here on Tasty Live. But until then, have a good rest of your week. Up next, Tasty Live programming continues after a brief break. We're going to be with Dr. Jim. Yes, it is. Dr. Jim Schultz with From Theory to Practice.
Have a good weekend, folks.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Live Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing